Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
I've heard a lot of talk that technology makes us safer in many ways. And behind the wheel, you can certainly argue that, you know, we've had the advancement of things like airbags, and anti-lock brakes, and different technologies that have made cars safer, right? We can acknowledge that. But now, Chevy, General Motors, is doing some things to try to make driving safer for your teenager, your new driver.
Yeah, and we know that there are apps out there that you can track your kid, yeah, and maybe their speed and things along those lines. And different insurance companies, you can also put devices in the car for, you know, sudden braking and follow all of those things. But what we're seeing right now is this technology being built into these cars.
Yeah.
And Chevy has this new teen driver package.
Interesting.
So what if I told you this?
Okay.
That you could program your teenager's key fob, all right? So they go to unlock the door. Boop, boop, yep. And for my car, when I do that, it automatically sets the seat to my position.
It knows it different from your husband.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, got it.
And with a teenager, what it would do is your teen, 16, 17, 18, whatever, gets in the car, and the car will start, but you can't put it into drive. You can't shift it.
Can't shift.
Unless the seatbelt is clicked.
Yeah. According to some of the numbers, the Centers for Disease Control says 60%, less than 60% of high school students say they always wear their seatbelts.
Do you?
I wear my seatbelt?
Yeah.
Literally every foot I've ever driven.
Me too.
And I have friends who will sit in the passenger seat with me and not wear the seatbelt and will ignore the ding every 30 seconds or whatever.
Oh.
It drives me up one side and down the other because I'm like, I said, first off, I tell them, I've seen me drive. The fact that you're not wearing a seatbelt, listen, I think you're literally taking your life into your own hands. But I'm not going to feel nearly as bad for you because you're not wearing a seatbelt. When I wrap this car around a pole,
don't do
again,
that.
There's always a chance.
Don't do that.
At least I'm wearing a seatbelt. I'm trying to give myself a chance, even for things that may be out of my control. Why would you not wear a seatbelt? I do not understand it.
And with my daughter Riley in the back seat, I don't move the car until the seatbelt is engaged. So I'm like, all right, we got the seatbelts on. Everybody buckled in. All right. And then mom takes off. But what they're finding is with this new technology out there, a message will alert the driver to buckle their safety belt in order to shift the gear. So up on the dashboard, there's a little
The information display
that comes up that says, you know, buckle your seatbelt.
Got it.
Now, after 20 seconds, that's going to go away and the car is going to operate as normal.
Okay.
But it is more of this reminder.
A reminder.
Not so much a mandate. But there are a couple of other things on this teen driver package that you can install on that key fob as well.
Yeah, I think this really starts to get interesting.
You can set speed alerts. And not just alerts like, oh, you know what, Riley went 60
miles an hour.
Yeah, exactly. But you can also put a maximum speed on there as well, so they can't go over a certain speed.
The car just won't go any quicker.
Parents can also get report cards and tracking a teen's driving behavior.
I think that's interesting. And I think while I've heard this before, I've seen parents, you know, when like you give the keys.
No, I can't.
Look at the look on your face already. You've just started doing it. Like the terror.
Yeah.
That parents
feel.
Oh,
my goodness.
Wouldn't this make you feel slightly better?
Potentially. You know what's making me feel better, too, is just all, no matter who makes the car, there are so many different manufacturers out there who are building safety into it.
Agreed.
Whether it's like lane departure.
Yeah, where it shakes the steering wheel if you drift out of a lane.
Or, you know what, the automatic emergency braking system where
You seen those?
If a kid runs out in front of your car, it stops the car for you.
I had a rental car that did that.
Oh, yeah?
I didn't know what it was, by the way. I won't say it scared me, but it caught me off guard.
Oh, sure it does.
Where I was in traffic and the car in front of me started to slow down and I'm driving. And so maybe I drive a little closer to people than the car. But
maybe.
The car started slowing down. I go, what are you doing? Why is this car slowing down? And then the little thing on the dashboard, it was trying to keep space between me and the car in front.
So, I mean, as a parent, that makes me feel better.
Yeah.
But I want to get back to something you talked about a little earlier. When you have a passenger in your car
that doesn't wear the seatbelt.
And, you know, every 30 seconds the beep goes off. I say that I wear my seatbelt all the time. There's one instance.
Ooh.
One instance where I usually don't, but then I'm forced to. Play
Ooh,
along
that?
With me here.
I'm ready.
The once every 2 weeks that I go to the mailbox because I have one of those communal mailbox
things.
Yeah,
got to go down.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a pain in the butt. Yes,
right.
I'm sorry to my mail person there. But I get the mail. I get back in the car. And my house is like four houses,
you
five houses
house.
Down. Yeah. So there are times where I don't put the seatbelt
wow.
on.
Okay.
And as I get around like house one or house two, bing, bing.
Yeah.
Bing, bing. It drives me up a wall.
Yeah.
That I am almost practically pulling into my driveway and I'll put the seatbelt in just to make the beeping stop. And we find out that if you increase the beeping sound, meaning you make it last longer or have it just continue indefinitely, that would increase seatbelt use by more than 30%. And more people are like me going, just shut this thing off. Because the main reason why people don't use their seatbelt is because either they forget
okay.
or they're going short distances, like me, from the mailbox.
Have you heard the statistics that accidents occur close to your home?
Yeah, because you're always around
Which
your home.
Which makes sense because you're
okay.
always coming or going from it.
But I mean, I'm like four houses down, for
right,
goodness sakes. But yeah, that beeping is so annoying. That's what gets me to put the seatbelt on, even if it's just like four houses away.
I pretty much insist on it on my passengers. I do get to the point where I guilt them into wearing it, even those that don't normally wear seatbelts, because I'm uncomfortable. And I mean this honestly. I realize driving can be dangerous.
Yeah, it's the most dangerous thing you're going to do today.
Maybe more than others with my hobbies.
Yeah, well, there is that.
I know how seatbelts help me.
How they've saved your life.
When I've destroyed race cars.
You've rolled it.
When I'm aware of their use. I accept a certain measure of responsibility when I'm driving a car. Okay, I accept the danger behind it. I don't think it's fair that I have to accept your irresponsibility.
Oh, look at you.
I don't think it's fair that I have to live with the consequences of you not wearing a seatbelt in my car. I don't think that's fair to me. And that's what I tell people. This is not fair to me that we are in, you know, car comes out of nowhere, tire blows, whatever happens.
So when does that conversation
and
take
I,
place?
And I unbuckle and walk away and you're injured or worse. So, I don't think it's fair that I have to accept your lack of responsibility.
So how does that play itself out? So you know what?
It's probably not said nearly that nicely.
Really?
No. No. I'm like, I can pull over.
Wow, man.
I'm like, I'm uncomfortable driving.
Why don't you just say, hey, you know what? Can you buckle your seatbelt?
I start with it though. But okay. I have people that
you
are
don't
habitual.
Go straight to
no,
the,
no, I have the habitual I don't wear a seatbelt.
I'm not responsible for your death
but,
if I wrap it around
but I tell
the
them,
light pole.
If you don't wear a seatbelt when you're driving, that's a responsibility
that's
you've
a you
accepted.
Decision?
That's a you decision.
Okay.
I think you're an idiot. I wish you the best of luck, and it was nice knowing you. You can't do that to me in my car. That is unfair to
this
do to
is
me.
My car, man. My car, my rules.
I don't think that. Am I weird?
No, you're not weird. Maybe your approach is a little weird, but your car, your rules, not so weird. My husband, Chris, is similar. My parents, you know, when they're in town and we're all loading mm-hmm. into the
Everybody
family truckster
in.
Wagon, right? And mom or dad is inevitably sitting in the back seat with Riley and I. You know, you're kind of like, you know,
elbow,
shoulder to shoulder, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, no, we're good. You know, I can't dig the seatbelt out because
it's the middle seat.
We also have like the dog protector over the back seat.
We have the dog protector.
So you have to like reach around and dig for it. Oh, no, it's okay. Chris is always like, no, you can get out. I'll get it for you.
We'll wait.
Yeah, we'll wait.
We get all the time
and he's always like, no, you can buckle it. We're good. He's like you in that sense.
Yeah. Then I don't think I should have to accept the responsibility for your life. I don't think that's fair. I'll accept a certain measure of it.
Well, yeah, especially when you're the one
but if
driving.
You won't take, if you won't even wear your seatbelt, now you've gone past my part. We've heard a lot about the flow of migrants, immigrants, asylum seekers coming across our border. But who's going the other direction? And how many of them?
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
It's a surge at our southern border, Pamela. There's throngs of people making it across the border. But wait. They're going to Mexico? Who's going into Mexico these days.
I think this is interesting. Yeah, this surge of people crossing the U.S.-Mexico border, the thing is, it's a lot of Americans heading south. We hear so much about the Central Americans and Mexicans that are coming across our southern border, but there are a lot of us going across that southern border into Mexico as well. A lot of American retirees that have now headed south of the border and set up shop in Mexico for retirement. Think about this.
I know some of these people. I do.
Okay.
I know people that have been planning for retirement for years and have been setting themselves up either in the process of building or have a place in Mexico, and their retirement plan is they've looked at dollars and cents and said, we have a completely different style of a lifestyle in Mexico than we would have here.
I was just having a conversation with a woman on Sunday. She's exploring the possibility of retiring to Costa Rica.
Costa Rica!
For that very same reason, because the dollar goes so much further. I love Costa Rica.
Okay, there you have it.
Costa Rica's
awesome. Put it on the list. Just put it on the list.
But in San Miguel, Mexico, 10% of the city's residents are U.S. citizens.
10%?
10%. Now, they've got 100,000 people.
They're being overrun.
Right, right. But here's the deal. They kind of take a different approach.
They have to put a Sam's Club in there.
Well, the mayor gives his speech, his yearly speech, in both Spanish and English.
What part of Mexican don't you understand?
Thanksgiving is also celebrated a few weeks after Mexico's Day of the Dead. Think about this.
Día de los Muertos.
So you've got,
end
turkey
of October.
And gravy and mashed potatoes.
Really?
And then what about this? Now,
so let me get this straight. They're welcoming is what I'm getting.
Well, I mean, sure.
But they're bringing money.
What I don't know what to make of this. You're going to have to explain this to me because I'm reading this straight out of this article. It says, restaurants in San Miguel have adopted American timing, serving dinner at the ungodly hour of 6 p.m., the mayor reports. When you say ungodly, is that late or is that early?
I think that's early in Mexican culture, yes.
I have no idea, because 6 o'clock is usually when I eat dinner. So I'm like, that's totally American in that sense.
American
that's early.
Custom slash culture, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Am I got that right to my Hispanic friends? Because I've been around it long enough. My impression is I eat dinner later.
Well, the retirees say that they're heading down south of the border because they can live in San Miguel or other cities on about $2,000 to $3,000 a month and live well.
Wow. I mean, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? I mean, I guess there's a lot to be said for this. And again, I keep running into people and these aren't people I would classify as struggling in any way, shape or form. But, you have the what does retirement look like in the United States? And what would it look like in Mexico? And can I just tell you, their retirement in Mexico involves living on a beach.
You had me at beach. Like,
but I'm saying,
you had me at beach.
And try to do that in San Diego.
Oh,
try
my goodness.
It's prohibitively expensive.
Right, right.
So if that's your vision of retirement, you got to go somewhere else.
Okay, but when you're saying you could spend $2,000 to $3,000 a month and live well,
we
know that there are a lot of Americans that are struggling to save for retirement, right? That their cost of living has gone up, but their wages haven't kept pace over the last 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
So maybe they aren't saving for retirement as much as they used to or have a little bit in the bank.
Sure.
Do you take that amount and go to Mexico? You might not be living high on the hog, so to speak, playing pickleball at the latest court.
You know about pickleball.
Well, because they got a ton of courts down there.
Wow.
And they even have tournaments that have been set up all because of the expats.
Don't tell my brother this. My brother says he's going to be a pickleball world champion, and he wants it to be an Olympic sport.
This is pretty funny.
That's the lawyer.
But when you go down there, they've got all of these different groups that in
large groups of Americans down there. You can go down there and I don't mean to sound silly, but a lot of people speak English.
Well, that's the thing. When I say groups, I'm not talking about just like clumps of individuals. I'm talking about they've got the Rotary Club.
The communities, yeah.
They've got quilter circles.
That's a thing.
Alcoholics Anonymous have made some
AA meetings down there.
Yeah. Wow. Now, the U.S. population in Mexico is still a lot smaller than the Mexican immigration population here in America. But you're seeing more and more Americans headed south of the border for retirement, that you're starting to see how they're having an influence and an impact on Mexican towns.
You know, you've heard of Puerto Vallarta.
Oh, yeah, sure.
35,000 Americans live permanently in Puerto Vallarta. That's a pretty decent chunk of folks down there. Going to have to put in a Chick-fil-A. Going to have to get one of those down
a
there.
Chick-fil-A.
Got to get a Chick-fil-A. I'm like, we ain't living out here without a Chick-fil-A. Wow. So, Sesame Street. Yes, the beloved television show for children's has a new character. In an effort to teach, they're walking a fine line, maybe? Have they gone too far this time? We'll tell you about Sesame Street's new character coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's News Station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Did you run home from school to watch Sesame Street or The Electric Company, maybe, some of those shows? I remember Sesame Street.
I never got into Sesame Street.
I remember like the big characters, you know, Oscar and Big Bird. But boy, the times they are changing. If you haven't spent a lot of time with Sesame Street lately, you may not recognize some of the characters, including some of the new ones.
Yeah, Sesame Street has come out with a new character.
Okay.
Her name is Carly.
Carly,
all right,
McKay.
She's the new Muppet, so to speak, in town.
Got it. Welcome.
And Carly is a child who is in the foster care system.
A foster child.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's this video that has now been put out by it's called the Sesame Initiative. And this is a group of individuals within the organization, the Sesame Workshop rather, that are trying to support kids going through traumatic experiences. You may remember back in December, they came out with a Muppet, another character who was homeless.
Yes, yes.
Do you remember that?
Yes, 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 yes.
And we had the discussion about, you know, do we need to be talking about homelessness at this age?
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same thing with foster kids. And here's a little clip from the movie. This is Carly's... What do they call? They call them the for now parents instead of foster parents.
Not foster.
For now.
I didn't know.
Parents.
That.
These are the parents explaining foster care. Take a listen.
Sometimes even mommies and daddies need some help taking care of their children. Carly's mommy's been having a hard time, so we are her foster parents or her for now parents. We will keep her safe until her mommy can take care of her again.
What do you think about Sesame Street going down this avenue?
Interesting. Okay, so if I understand, can I tell you what it reminds me of?
What?
Last year we had the documentary about Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah.
What was it called again? Yes. It was excellent, though. We both liked it, right?
Uh-huh.
And Mr. Rogers made a point to try to address adult things with in a kid's way. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Going back to dealing with like things like racism.
Sure.
But trying to put it in a context of kids. So it strikes me this is what it feels the same. Sesame Street's trying to take adult themes, but Pamela, these are things that kids are seeing, experiencing, maybe not understanding. And if they don't learn it here, where do you learn?
Right. So initially, you know, back in 2018, so long ago, right, December 2018, when they were talking about having a homeless Muppet, you know, mm-hmm. I kind of run it through the filter of, is this really necessary?
Do we need a homeless Muppet?
Do we need to be teaching one, two, three, four-year-olds, five-year-olds about this? And you could also run it through this filter as well with foster kids and for-now parents. Do we really need to be teaching this to kids? Because the next avenue, I guess you could say, that they're going to explore is substance abuse. They've also tackled the issue of incarcerated parents. And so there's a part of me that says, no, let kids be kids.
Yeah.
And stop hitting them over the head with these very adult issues. But then, got to admit, I step outside of my bubble. My bubble is very comfortable, and I like being in my bubble.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I step out of that bubble, I recognize that there is a place for this. When you look at the number of kids, in this instance, in foster care.
Foster care kids.
It's grown for the last 5 consecutive years. 2017, about 440,000 children spent time in foster care, 6 out of every 1,000 kids in the U.S. And my daughter Riley, I know, knows children in the foster care system. Some of my closest friends have fostered children.
Sure.
And so we've had these conversations. I can have this conversation about foster care. I honestly like don't know how you would have that conversation with a kid whose parents are incarcerated abusing drugs or alcohol or whatever.
Agreed.
So I commend them for taking that.
But the reality is
it's
that
happening.
The child will intersect that at some point.
Sure.
And then how do they deal with it? Because it strikes me they're dealing with it in the most positive way they possibly can.
Yeah.
Mostly in the sense of, it's not the child's fault that they're homeless. It's not the child's fault that mom or dad is incarcerated. It's not the child's fault they're in a foster program. And I think that's a great message to send.
So, again, my knee-jerk reaction is, seriously, let kids be kids. But then when I say I step out of this bubble, I recognize that there, unfortunately, is a need for some of this.
Real world.
And then what if I were to tell you, Carly, the Muppet who is in the foster care system?
Yeah.
You're not going to see her on the television show. These videos that the Sesame Workshop are developing are to be used by parents or caretakers, maybe even therapists or social workers, that helps work with kids in these situations.
And use Muppets, use something they're comfortable with, Sesame Street characters, or the concept of these Muppets, puppets speaking to them, to teach some very adult issues in a relatable way to children.
And when they talked to people within these organizations around the country that work with young people, kids, young children rather, homelessness and foster care and substance abuse were the ones that these organizations chose because there's not a lot of resources out there addressing these very adult kinds of issues from a child's perspective.
So when you
take a couple steps back, the knee-jerk reaction, I got to admit, for me, it was like, seriously, can we just let kids be kids? But when you dive below the headline and you start to understand what are they doing, why are they doing, who does this serve, I say good job.
Good job to them. And you have managed to completely gloss over the fact, though.
What's that? What did I gloss over?
Completely gloss over the fact that your child watching Sesame Street has just gotten completely okay with a blue character that lives in a trash can and an 8-foot-tall yellow bird.
He's green. No. He's green. That lit. Oscar the Grouch is green.
Kind of bluish, I thought. Okay. Maybe I need to have my eyes checked again. You're fine with that. The 8-foot-tall yellow bird, perfectly normal. A kid in the foster care system? I don't know. Really? Do we need to be?
I'm trying to, like, is it Gonzo? And I'm trying, who's the blue one? I can see the blue one in my head.
Gonzo's a Muppet.
He's a Muppet. But
I don't think he was on Sesame Street.
Grover?
Grover! Yeah, it starts with Grover.
Also, Cookie Monster is blue.
Oh. Cookies!
We're perfectly okay with it.
Perfectly.
Those are normal. They're part of everyday life.
I mean, come on.
Snuffleupagus, part of everyday life. Foster kids, hold on a second. What kind of a world do we want to live in?
Well, when you put it like that.
The city of Baltimore is being held hostage digitally? What's going on? And could it happen here? Talking about it next.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
You might have some of these programs on your computer, you know, antivirus, malware, etc. But ransomware is a new terminology, I think, for a lot of people. 60 Minutes just recently did a piece about it. And the city of Baltimore is smack dab in the middle of a ransomware attack.
Imagine this, right? The city's online services have been pretty much shut down because hackers were able to get into some servers 2 weeks ago. Now, the hackers, they won about $100,000.
Okay.
All right. City's saying, nope, we're not doing
not
this.
Done it. Not
we're working with the FBI.
Be
so it's probably going to take weeks, if not months, and it's going to be really expensive because Baltimore doesn't have any insurance to help with the cost of this. So what's going on in Baltimore right now? People can't make any online payments. Real estate transactions have screeched to a halt and have been delayed. And much of the city's email and even phone systems are down.
This is pretty amazing. So I was not fully aware of kind of how it worked. And one of the reasons is that when cities are faced with this, or companies are, they don't publicize it because they think it might make them more of a target. So we're learning about the city of Baltimore right now that is in the midst of one of these ransomware attacks where a lot of things aren't working, but they're hardly the first city that's gone through this.
Atlanta has gone through this as well. Now, the difference between Baltimore and Atlanta is Atlanta did have insurance to help with the cost. And Atlanta was also featured in a recent piece done by CBS. And they talked a little bit about the ransomware, the threat, what it said. Take a listen.
Your network has been encrypted. If you would like to purchase the decryption keys, you have 7 days to do so, or your network files will be permanently deleted. And then it gave us the amount that we would need to pay to get that back.
And that came to?
About $55,000.
Yeah, so you log on to your computer, and they were talking like city managers, you know, the police, this and the other. You log on to your computer, and you get a notice. And you can't access anything on your computer. All the files have been encrypted, and they basically give you a deadline. If you don't pay us by X, we just delete everything.
So going to Atlanta here in the 60 Minutes piece, what didn't work while they were battling this? Take a listen.
911 was up and running, but for a while, the police did not have the ability to do computer checks on license plates and cars they were pulling up on and that kind of thing, which was a concern.
What else crashed?
The court system went down, which was a major inconvenience for the thousands of people cycling through municipal court.
So you've got a law enforcement issue. You've got a judicial issue.
Like you can't register your car.
You can't sell your house.
You can't do anything.
You can't pay your bills online. So we're talking about this from like a city, a municipality type of issue. Atlanta's a pretty big city, too. Atlanta, Baltimore. I mean, there's some biggies there that are dealing with this. But you can kind of play this out. You don't have to be a big city to have this become an issue. And I'm not even talking about your laptop or, if you still have a desktop, computer here. Take a listen to this.
At what point does this ransomware come to our phones, where some crook says, I've got your phone, send me $50?
I think it's already on the doorstep for that.
Wow.
I think some of those devices that connect to the internet can not only be compromised, but they can be used to facilitate other attacks under the command and control of bad actors.
This can be, I have your phone, I have your car, I have your house, anything that's connected to the internet.
Absolutely.
Okay, let that sink in a second.
And this is not meant to like unnecessarily scare people. This is happening. This is real. And cities and companies are paying the ransom. And one of the things I learned in the 60 Minutes piece, Pamela, which aired just a couple of weeks ago in 60 Minutes about ransomware, was that a lot of them have these security companies or these companies that try to protect their networks. And they come back to them and they say, you need to pay. What do you mean you need to pay? You guys are our security company. Yeah, we can't. Once they've got your files, there's nothing we can do. We can't get through the encryption before they will delete everything if you don't pay them. You're better off paying them because it's a risk reward. And a lot of the cities are saying, if someone were to delete all the city's files,
oh, good night,
we can't calculate what that would cost us.
Wow.
So if they're asking for $55,000, somebody write them a check now, and then let's try to be safer in the future.
I think we need to get like Ken Colburn on from the Data Doctors to talk about like how to protect your phone and your home and your car. If you can't, like your home and your phone, I kind of get like your car. How do you protect that? I think we need to work on that, guys. Stevie Z, all right. Hey, if you subscribe to the Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes Show podcast, we make it super easy for you on that phone. Yes, on that phone, you can download the podcast. This week, it's brought to you by National Bank of Arizona.
Checking the headlines on the way. There is a budget up at the state capitol. What's in it? What's not in it? And will it even have a chance to pass? Will we move forward? We got an expert smack dab in the middle of it. He's going to help us understand it. Howie Fisher joins us next on Arizona's News Station.